On the show today, we have CSI's very own Sean Martin and Tyler Lee. They were here talking about Don't Let Your Guard Down, Cybersecurity Resiliency to the Rescue. And kind of the subtitle there is why and how credit unions should embrace a holistic cybersecurity approach to enhance their defenses against evolving threats out there in today's day and age. So yeah, really, really good stuff here from Sean and Tyler. So check it out. Buddy Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we're doing a little live cast with the gentleman from CSI. Right next to me, we have Mr. Tyler Leet from CSI. Tyler, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Now, better now that you guys are here. So we get to have a fun conversation. And right below us is Mr. Sean Martin as well. Sean, how are you, sir?
Fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, guys. Yeah, we have a really cool topic today. It's entitled, Don't Let Your Guard Down, Cybersecurity Resiliency to the Rescue. And so, obviously, cybersecurity is probably the top three concerns that are on everybody's brain these days. And it has been that way for quite some time, and it's not going to go away. But thankfully, we have you guys at CSI keeping us safe and sound and keeping the bad guys at bay. Keeping one step ahead of them. So, and kind of the I don't know, I guess the addendum to this topic is why and how credit unions should embrace holistic cybersecurity approach to enhance their defenses against these evolving threats that are out there. And so, Sean, that said, I'm going to start out with you here. So what are some of the, what are the top industry trends that you are seeing, and what new or evolved risks do these trends represent, and how do these risks mitigated too? So, I mean, I know that's a big question to start out with, but I know you can handle it.
But I appreciate it. So, yeah, you know, definitely, you know, I'm glad we're talking about trends. It's certainly something that's really important as we kind of think and really want to work to be a little bit, or I guess as proactive as we can to cybersecurity. And certainly that's a much better position than being reactive, right? So learning about something new and there's a new risk and trying to figure out how to mitigate. So in terms of kind of industry trends, one of the biggest things that I think that we're seeing across the board for financial institutions, and to be honest, a lot of other organizations as well, is that organizations today are really focused on improving their business continuity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think this is kind of naturally coming out of our experience through the pandemic and in 2020. But we know that's not the only thing that can cause a service disruption to financial institutions. Things like wildfires that we seem to be hearing more about becoming more prevalent, inclement weather conditions that may disrupt access to a facility, power outages that are occurring, internet outages, and so on. These are all things that can disrupt organizations. And what we're really hearing from organizations is they want to be really better prepared than maybe they have been in previous years.
Yeah.
We know that organizations want to be able to say, hey, we've got, you know, a local virus outbreak or something else going on that's impacting our community or our facility, but we want to be in a position to say, I'm going to send all of my employees home. I want them to be able to work securely so that we're not bringing the business down. We want to continue to operate, you know, even though we've got something going on. And so in terms of technology, what that really means is we're seeing things like accelerated move to the cloud. And so for some organizations, that might be, you know, doing things like as their servers are, you know, reaching end of life and they know they need to be replaced, maybe, you know, building those servers within a public cloud infrastructure, mm-hmm. rather than replacing on site, as an example, right? You know, things like certain services, mail, very common these days to be in the cloud, whether it's through Microsoft 365 or some other platform. And then also, you know, as new services and software are being introduced to organizations, you know, commonly those are just going to be available as cloud systems as opposed to on-premise. And what that means is as all of that becomes available in the cloud, now if I have a problem in my data center on site, I can still access that remotely. There are some other key things here, you know, remote workforce, very important. So if I want to send my users home and I want them to work remotely, I need to make sure that that end user is secure in how they are connecting to corporate data. So things like mobile device management helps secure things like phones, can also help Secure things like personal computers. So we're seeing interest there. Things like virtual desktop in the cloud is also another area that we're starting to see interest as well. So these are all things that, that businesses can do to make sure that, that their users can work remote, but in a secure and compliant way. Very important. Another area that we're seeing be impacted here, things like communication systems. So we're seeing the traditional voice systems that may have components on site for an organization now start to change. We're seeing things like Microsoft Teams or WebEx or Slack or other systems start to replace those traditional phone systems. Yeah. And what that means is we've got all new risks associated with all of these technologies. You know, now, rather than just have a phone conversation, we may be having video, we may be doing chat, we may be sharing files, but this is now all new areas and new channels where data can now leave the network. So things like data loss prevention systems become much more important today because we now have all of this data able to move around the network in a way that it hasn't before. I'll also mention one other thing I think to be aware here, things like API usage is another area that we're seeing a lot of activity. So organizations are wanting to be in a position to say, I have a piece of software, but I don't really want to build my business process around that software. I want to have a business process and I want to integrate data into it. And so that might mean that I'm going to use an API to grab some data, integrate that with some other data from another system, which allows me to build my workflows and things in a way that's very beneficial. But that also means I might be bypassing controls within certain software applications.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, things like access control systems, things like DLP, the data loss prevention, again, become really important to make sure we've got the right type of technology, the right type of controls as we take advantage of these new technologies.
Yeah, good stuff here for sure. And the next question is for both of you as well. And Tyler, I'll let you go first on this one. What mistakes do you see credit unions making in their security strategies, especially as we head into 2023 and there's so many new threats out there that you guys have pointed out in the past? So what are some mistakes that you're seeing out there?
Well, one of the common mistakes, and it's not exclusive to credit unions. I mean, by and large, it's many industries out there, but it's failing to invest in the human element. Oftentimes, you will hear about the conversation with budgeting that's buying this hardware or this software or whatever that will help make us more secure. And yes, while it absolutely can play a major role in that, the human element is the one common denominator and oftentimes the weakest link. And so whether it's investing in the training and awareness within your organization to make them more aware of threats out there, how to make better security decisions, have better security hygiene, or investing on the expertise side, whether it's through MSPs who have that expertise that can come through and run things properly, set up networks properly, make good security decisions, or your own staff internally and making sure that you have qualified individuals to play those roles, whether it's through your own hires or through a third party, whatever it might be. Those investments in human side, the non-technology side, are oftentimes overlooked by many organizations because they think technology is software and hardware. There's where the keys are going to be. And yes, there are lots of good answers, but there's no silver bullet. And the human element you'll find, if you've ever heard the term social engineering, and I'm sure everybody has, it is very, very commonly the one thing that is used to leverage and gain access to data or a network.
Yeah. So yeah, like you said, the training is so important there because all it takes is just one click and oh my gosh,
chaos can certainly fall.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And Sean, anything to add on that one?
I think that's exactly right. And I think, another thing that I see, some organizations struggle with is just making sure they have visibility into all of the various areas of their network, especially as we sort of change, where the borders are of networks. If we move into cloud, we have remote users, making sure we have visibility into what those users are doing if they're not in the office. So if they're working from home, how do we ensure that we've got the controls in place that mean that an organization is not downloading all of their email onto a personal system as an example, right? So just making sure we have that visibility and the right controls to support this sort of borderless network that we're really moving towards.
Yeah, so many moving parts here, guys. I just think it's a phenomenal effort that we've been this protected for this long. So, yeah, so keep up the good work on your end. And Tyler, I'm coming back to you on this one here. Do you have any recommendations for financial institutions, credit unions in this case, on how they should access their current defenses and where to begin enhancing them? Any recommendations here?
And there's an obvious answer. And it's actually, I could have answered this as part of one of the mistakes that are made, but a proper risk assessment. I mean, you're talking about how do you assess? I mean, a key properly done risk assessment is the starting point for all of that. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes people roll their eyes when you think about a risk assessment. Oh, I have to do this risk assessment, so I have this piece of paper for the examiners or whatever it is. But if you really boil it down, the value of the risk assessment is not in the document that you end up with. Yes, it's a good reference, a summary of what you did. It's the thought process and the learning exercise and the things that you're thinking through along the way to reaching those conclusions is how you really find information about your organization, about your network and its data. Mm-hmm. So a properly conducted risk assessment where you sit down, bring the proper parties in, you go through and classify your assets, you identify your data assets, your IT assets, you classify those to the various scoring metrics. Then you go through and say, okay, what are the risks to these? What threats are out there that want to come and harm these or could potentially harm these? And doing the scoring on that, and then you look at your controls, but let me jump back. Then you have your what's called the inherent risk. So it's the risk without your controls considered. All right, so that's state with no controls. Then you're like, okay, what controls do we have? Let's look at those. How good are those controls? And then what does that reduce our risk to? What is our residual risk level?
Okay.
So it's the risk once your controls have been taken into consideration, how much it was reduced. Mm-hmm. Now, the last point, that you're not done there. Now you should look at it and say, okay, for the assets and where we have this risk, where do we think we have too much risk for the value of the assets that are out there? Where do we need to improve? Where are our weaknesses so we can lower that residual risk level on these individual things? So if you go through that thought process properly, mm-hmm. it makes a huge difference as far as identifying your organization, knowing the data and the information in your network, like Sean mentioned, and then how you can, the steps that you can take cost effectively, because it lets you, we don't have unlimited dollars, unfortunately, it lets you prioritize what you're going to put your dollars toward to get the biggest bang for your buck.
Yeah, indeed. Well said. Well said. And Sean, related to your cybersecurity monitoring services, where are you seeing the most security incidents today?
You know, it's a great question. And what I'll kind of maybe caveat some of this with is that I think my answer to this question would likely change very frequently. It's just sort of the nature of the beast of cybersecurity and cybersecurity monitoring. You know, what we see going on this week or this month may be totally different than what we see next month and so on. Yeah. Now, that said, what I will say is right now, we are seeing kind of maybe a notable elevation in things like foreign authentication attacks. And what I mean by that is maybe like, you know, foreign countries trying to locate things that, you know, that they could maybe brute force their way into, like VPN connections is a good example, mm-hmm. Cloud systems that might have external access and we need a username and password to be able to connect. So, you know, we see various, you know, scanning, kind of automated scanning, you know, kind of followed by attacks against those kind of simple password protective resources. You know, another area that probably, you know, that's equally large, and this is one that we've kind of seen for a while, is, you know, attacks against credentials that are in the cloud. So like an Office 365 email account, something like that, right. Where somebody's going in and trying to completely compromise that account. The normal attack vector, and if we want to sort of, you know, kind of maybe abstract a little bit here, phishing attacks. This is where we almost always see this happen. So, you know, a phishing attack comes in, somebody clicks a link, they provide either information or they get some software injected onto their machine, and then a remote user at that point is gleaning all kinds of information, using that to log in, compromising accounts. You know, certainly in the credit union space, attackers will attempt to gain access to email systems as a way to try and implement a funds transfer. And we've seen that be successful. Wow. So, you know, having the right controls in place on those types of systems, you know, a hint, Multi-factor authentication, critical whenever you have cloud systems that are out there, you know, super important and something that can really, you know, help mitigate against a lot of this. So, you know, maybe kind of a long answer there, but you know, that's kind of what we're seeing today.
Well, yeah, because I keep hearing more and more cloud, obviously, and credit unions considering going to the cloud, and I think a majority of them are and probably will. These are the types of things that they have to consider as well. It's obviously, we know the benefits of going to the cloud, but there's also the security side as well, right? So that, and that's a big concern for a lot of credit unions. So, but having all these things in place will certainly mitigate those threats out there. So, and Tyler, what are some of the types of questions credit unions should be asking to enhance their defenses, especially in today's environment, and even in today's cloud environment too?
Yeah, the multitude of questions I already went over in the risk assessment, but to kind of build more on Sean's point and going into that cloud discussion, the data governance questions. What types of data do we have? Where is that data? Where is it coming from and going to?
Yeah.
Who has access to that data? If you don't know the data that you have, whether it's in the cloud, at a third-party provider, internally within the various systems, how are you going to protect it? If you don't know what type of data is where, you're not going to be able to protect it. Because you can't protect everything to the same degree. But if you know where your higher risk data is, you can take greater precautions to protect those areas. And plus, it's just important to know where your data is going to and coming from. That's why you've heard, I'm sure, everybody that's listening on the broadcast in the credit union space, or if you're related to financial institutions at all, you've heard of data flow diagrams as far as the expectation. And that's the purpose. It's a visualization, a visual map of your data and where it resides, where it goes from or comes from, where it goes to, and who has access to it.
I think I'm going to subtitle this one "Protecting the Cloud" as well. So, because this is going to obviously, and you guys are living it on a daily basis, but for a lot of folks out there, this is going to be a growing concern, a growing priority in 2023 for sure. So, gosh, guys, I could talk about this stuff all day long because cybersecurity is so top of mind for anybody these days. Anything else to add to wrap up here, Sean? Any final thoughts here on this topic?
You know, I think I'll go back to a point that Tyler made, you know, early on here. Make sure that if you want to be successful, make sure that you're properly investing in the human element. You know, if you really look at a lot of these technical vulnerabilities that we kind of talked about, you know, there are technologies to help guard against a lot of that. But, you know, the suggestion that I'd really make to a lot of organizations is work to build a secure culture within your organization. Set examples from the top that, yeah, we know we have these security controls, they're in place. Sometimes they're not super convenient, but they're really important, and make sure that you're really kind of building in that culture to your organization so that your users are always thinking about security, you know, second guessing, should I click on an email or not? You know, using multi-factor authentication, using the right kind of password protections, and so on. So really think about your end users. If you can make them be successful, you're going to really enhance your security of your organization.
Yeah, when in doubt, check it out. So that's kind of my thought process. Like, okay, if that doesn't look right, you know, so don't click on it. Because, sometimes the user or the human element, in my case, is I'm the weakest link in my security stuff for sure. So, yeah, Tyler, anything else to add on this one?
I'll just kind of finalize that point. I mean, especially those that are out there I know budgetary concerns are a major part for a lot of our financial institutions today. You don't get a much better return on investment as far as the dollar amount you spend toward the gain you get for a properly trained and aware staff, because you can make training and awareness fairly cheap compared to multi-thousand to potentially tens and hundreds of thousands of dollar pieces of software and hardware. So start with the fundamentals and then build from there.
Yeah, so true. Oh my gosh, no truer words been spoken right there. And to be consistent about it as well. I think if you do some sort of staff training, I don't know if it can be on a quarterly. I mean, I would think this would be like on a monthly basis. What advice would you have for training staff in this area? Should this be something every month, every week, every day?
My personal thing is you have a bigger formal training, at least annually, because you're going to have that big thing that examiners are going to expect that takes a little bit more time.
Right.
But outside of that, humans, we tend to have a short attention span at times and can drift away. So if you feed us too much information, it's just going to drift by. Okay. So what I would do is – on a monthly or whatever biweekly basis. You could do it weekly. Have someone that's in charge of like a security bytes, where it's just small little nibbles, updates of information that are just regularly fed, but are easy to digest.
Yep.
That just continuously show up in their inbox or on their screen. So it's always top of mind, but yet it's enough like, okay, yeah, I see that. It doesn't take me very long to read it. I'm not going to like zone out, and then I can go about my day. I think that's probably one of the more effective ways to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. Something, small bites like that, but nothing overwhelming that will, crowd the brain for sure. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for your insights and your expertise today. I mean, obviously this is a topic that's not going anywhere. It's only going to grow in importance. And so, but thank you for your efforts out there and keeping us safe as well. We appreciate that and look forward to the next chat, gentlemen. Well done.
Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate you having us.
Yep.
Anytime. Thanks, Michael.